Planar Prod presents The Attic Monologues.
Episode 17, Where Men May Read Strange Matters.
Okay, so it's me again. Just me. I'm not going to do it in front of Bella. This one's just for me. And you, Future Next. This is just proof that I have nothing to be afraid of. That these monologues are just that. Just paper and ink. Abandoned. Collecting dust in an attic. Who cares? So I picked up the nearest one. It's from the point of view of a guy called Matteo Ricci, a driven academic. God, I wish I could be a driven academic. Make uni a hell of a lot easier. But given the usual theme of these monologues, I guess being driven isn't going to end too well for Mr. Ricci. We'll see. Listen to me. Listen to me. It's real. It's real. They all told me, they said I would never find it, that it didn't exist, that I was chasing a fairy tale, a half-forgotten dream. But I was right. All this time. I'm sorry, I should start at the beginning, shouldn't I? Sorry, I just... something quite as brilliant as proving other people wrong, don't you think? Right. Apologies. So, I'm an academic. A classicist. I specialise in the study of lost text. Yes, that's right, go ahead and laugh. I specialised in the study of things that no longer exist. Or, if they do, they're buried far beneath earth or volcanic ash. There is nothing more fascinating. The past is a jigsaw puzzle. I have been tasked with piecing together out of air and other people's poetry. Most of it comes from quotations, you see. References people make to these whole bodies of work living memory has never read. Every classicist has that one lost text they would sell their soul to read. Mine is The Sack of Troy by Stesichorus. Of course, there are some fragments still in existence, but the whole poem? Just imagine. I'm getting off topic. This is tangentially related to my story, but it's important, I promise. There is a library. Somewhere you'll never find it. Not if you look for it. The library comes to you. It chooses you. When you have nothing left, when you need it most. It's not just a library. I see you sitting there thinking, just go into town, you're never too far from a library. This library, inside, it was infinite. That isn't a hyperbole. Infinite. Try to imagine it. You can't, can you? The world always ends, eventually. But not the library. How to describe it? It's been years, but I dream of it every night. The shelves are carved of dark stone and tower high above your head. The ceiling is so high it disappears into darkness. The corridors of shelves stretch so far you cannot tell where they end or if they even do at all. It feels more labyrinth than library. Though I cannot be certain which purpose is more important. The air is warm, but not too warm, and a light breeze seems to whistle occasionally from some unknown source. And floating in the air, tiny glowing spheres, like will-o'-the-wisps. As soon as I stepped through the door, one detached from the lazy swarm above my head, it came to float beside me. It was cold in colour, and cold to the touch, but bright, so bright. Magic, see? How was I, as a child, supposed to resist the pull of an infinity of books in a secret pocket universe? All of it, all to myself, and a little spirit guide to accompany me. I'm sorry, I keep getting lost. I always have, ever since I went there. My mind, it's like wandering a labyrinth, I suppose. Besides, I'm never sure where I should start. Chronologically, narratively, when I put the pieces together, or when they all fell apart. I'm sorry, let me start again. When I was a child, in my father's study, I fell through a door that wasn't there. It wasn't there as in had never been there before, or was no longer there when I returned. I fell in as in the door was in the ground, in the carpet, rather than a wall. My fault, really. I dropped the key on the carpet. Where did I expect the answering door to appear? It was my father's door. I understand that now. I found the key in his study. The door opened in his study, so perhaps you're thinking I should have figured this out sooner. But as a child, I convinced myself the key had appeared out of thin air, just for me. It had chosen me somehow. It considered me worthy to walk through. Now, I know it had been given to my father, and in me, a stranger, using his key, I'd exiled him forever. I've lost the order again, haven't I? I don't know why I'm bothering to try and find the start, really. You already know all of this. Or maybe you don't. I must admit your poker face is impressive. Very well, then. Let us pretend you have no idea what I'm talking about. Let me talk to you as to a child. Let me tell you about the key. It didn't look like a key for a start. It was in disguise. I suppose that's half the magic of it all. Can you guess what it looked like? Can you? Well, what better key to a library than a bookmark? It was red and gold in colour. Piece of fabric stitched with strange patterns around its edge, a small golden tassel attached to one end. There was writing, embroidered down the centre. The words were... well, they weren't Latin. Not exactly. It was Latin in the same way that Italian is Latin, garbled through countless mouths and centuries into something entirely new. Conjugated strangely, used in odd contexts. One of the words seemed borrowed from a different language entirely. It's not my area of expertise, really, and I am hesitant to ask others for help after all their ridicule. I remember the words, though, seen only once, yet seared onto my eyelids like the sun. Tua loca ut invenium Japhna. Ut invenium translates one for one, so you may find. Tua loca, however, a mangled form of the Latin words for your and place. But that last word, Japhna, I am certain it isn't Latin. Could you tell me what it means? It has bothered me for years. No? Oh well. As I said, did I say? I found the key in my father's study. He was an academic too, always hidden beneath his books, and the door to his study was always locked. But one weekend, when he was away for a conference, he must have left in a rush, because when I tried the handle, as I always did, just in case, when I tried the handle, the door opened. I was as careful as a curious child exploring can be. The bookmark key in one hand, my guiding light beside me, I walked through the stacks. I walked for hours, maybe days. Time doesn't move normally there, I'm sure of it, because when I eventually left, it was as if only seconds had passed. Even if time had been passing, I likely wouldn't have noticed. I picked up books at random. I couldn't tell you what the organization system was, though I'm sure there was one. I found picture books I recognised from childhood, novels my mother read in the garden in summer, texts my father had written about and tried to read to me in the original Greek from the tender age of 4. There were books and languages I recognised, and ones I didn't. The strangeness began, or should I say, escalated, I found a copy of The Last Battle by C.S. Lewis. Strange, because the ending was different, and Susan was in Narnia too. This pales in comparison to my final find. It was old-looking, small, tucked beneath a road atlas of the UK with all the roads in the wrong places, and a copy of Virgil's Aeneid written in Egyptian hieroglyphs. The Sack of Troy by Stesichorus, translated into English. Now, I was only 8, but my father had entertained our family over the dinner table with the topics of his research papers for as long as I could remember. I knew that this book was an impossible thing, and yet, here it was. Here I was, in this impossible place, with the fact of it held in my hands. I was so excited. I had to tell my father. I had to show him this, show him everything. I turned to go, back through my door to my father's study. And there, in front of me, looking as startled as I felt, was a person. They were short, thin in a spidery sort of way. Their hair was an explosion of black curls, dark skin, dark clothes. Their arms were bare, revealing intricate tattoos and bright white ink. The longer I stared at them, the more I was sure the designs were moving. At the sight of me, they dropped the stack of books they were holding, almost half the height of them. They stared at me. I stared at them, clutching my book in one hand, my key in the other. "You're not supposed to be here," they said. And in a flash, a literal bright flash, I felt the bookmark vanish from my fingers. When the light faded, my guide light was gone. The book was back on the shelf. And the person was holding my bookmark. They looked it over, as if there was more to read in its stitches than the un-Latin. He spoke a few words in a language I didn't recognize. The bookmark crumbled to dust in their hands. I cried out, I think, to stop them, to ask them what they were doing. But I didn't have time to grab for it, to say anything at all. Another flash of light, and I was gone. The world was black, then white, then too much to comprehend. I was on the floor in my father's office, as if I had simply fallen, as if I'd never left. The sunlight filtering through the window was strange and sharp on my eyes. My hands were empty. I was empty, gutted, hollowed out. It took days, months for me to comprehend it. I had touched magic, seen a world beyond our own, and I had it snatched away from me. I searched my father's study countless times, desperate. I found nothing. My father didn't bother locking his door anymore. There was nothing to guard, you see? I didn't realize until later that it must have been because of the key. And I was not the only one who had lost the library that day. Only he had no idea of the reason why.
I dedicated my life to its search. I settled in the classical because, well, lost texts and all that. The Sack of Troy. Besides, the Library of Alexandria seemed like a good place to start, in terms of authoritarian libraries gatekeeping knowledge. I said before that I was empty. I feel I must emphasize this. Ever since that day, there has been a hollow somewhere inside me, an ache in my chest, a cavern in my lungs, a dark stain splashed across my brain like ink, turned into a gaping, yawning mouth. It needs feeding. It never stops hungering. Even when I sleep, it dreams for me. I thought learning might satisfy me. A degree, a master's, a PhD, research papers and books and an entire library of my own, filling every wall of my house. There are books in my kitchen shelves and piled on every surface. I've read as many as I can. When I eat, I read. When I travel, when I sleep, I listen. It's never enough. It is as if the library has infected me with an emptiness, as if I left a part of myself there when I was young. My mind. I've sold my soul to it already. I don't have time for the world. There is nothing but the need to learn. And it is tearing me apart. A few weeks ago, I realized it would never be enough. Truly. Ever. Sitting by the window in my study, reading just as any other day, it hit me. The hopelessness overwhelmed me. I was paralyzed. I gave up. And then I looked through the window, and I saw them. A person on the empty street. They were nondescript, unremarkable. They held something in their hand, small, long, rectangular, glinting red and gold in the sun. Slowly, they placed it against the wall of a house, and it stuck, hanging there. And I watched as it grew, eating up the bricks and mortar until it was this huge mass of woven thread, the size of a door. It swung open, and the person stepped through, and they were gone. And the door was gone, and so was the key. It was just me, staring out of the window in my study, as if I had hallucinated, as if none of them had been there at all. But I know they were. You see what I mean? Nothing for decades, and then in the singular instant I decided to give up, there it was. And now I have proof. This time, I need not wait for someone to drop their pretensions and believe me. This time, I did not simply let the library happen to me. I own a video recorder. It's expensive, so I keep it in my office on my desk. It just so happened to be to hand that fateful, fateful day. What would you do to obtain magic? If you knew it existed just beyond your reach, if you were certain, if you had seen it just once and no one believed you, wouldn't you do anything to find it again, to prove them all wrong? Wouldn't you burn every bridge and drive yourself to breaking and then further for even a single taste of more? I waited. I knew, I just knew that something more would happen. And when the door reopened, when the person stepped through, I followed you. I followed you. And you led me here. Try to tell me I'm a liar. Try to deny it again. Try to send me away. I have nothing left to lose. Or you could get me a key. I need to get back there. I need to. Do you understand? I can be quiet. I can keep this a secret. But I will surely unravel without it. And if you will not permit me access, I shall be much louder than I have been. I will not rest until this secret is exposed to the world, until this knowledge is shared freely. I shall steal your key and make it unusable. I shall not let you rest. Do you understand me? I think this guy, Matteo Ricci, I think he needs therapy. Everyone in these things needs therapy, to be honest. The author definitely needs therapy. Maybe then they wouldn't send me threatening letters out of the blue. if it was even them. But look, I read a monologue and it was fine. No lightning or thunder, no world-ending disaster. No one died. It's almost as if they're just pieces of paper. Hey, future Nicks. Oh, I just had a thought. Okay, so this one is definitely set before the internet, because literally one quick Google and I now know that the word Jafnan is Old Norse for always. It's also the name of a song from Dark Souls, but I doubt that's the right reference. So you may find your place always. So you may always find your place. Huh. That's kind of cute, actually. To a library straight from a horror movie. Or something. I wonder if... Eachartum et atramentum laesa. That's what the author wrote on their letter, in the wax seal. I don't know why I didn't think. Okay, so I looked it up. If it was just Latin, it translates easy. Damaged paper and ink. That sounds nice and neat, I guess, but the Google doesn't like the E at the beginning. So I tried other stuff, Old Norse and Old English and a bunch of other old languages I could think of. In ink and paper chained. That's what it means, I think. Laesa is causing me trouble because it works in multiple languages as different things, and also because languages are not my thing at all. In ink and paper chained. I don't know what I expected. I don't know if this was supposed to mean something, or if this author just likes inventing languages in their own time. I thought maybe at least, maybe things would make sense. When has anything ever been that simple? Oh well. That was a fun way to kill half an hour. Now, back to the uni work. Oh, come in.
Hey.
Hey, I didn't hear you get in.
Yeah, sorry, I was at the library and then when I got home I could hear you talking and I didn't want to interrupt, sorry.
No, don't be sorry. You just startled me.
Were you on the phone to somebody?
Hmm? Oh, yeah, I was on the phone to Ollie, just, you know, checking up on him, making sure no one's burnt the house down since I last left.
And?
Nothing more than the usual scorch marks.
Oh, that's good. Speaking of houses, I just started tidying the kitchen.
Terrible segue, but please continue. I'm so proud of you.
Very out of character, I know. But I think Sam has been planning to kill one of us in our sleep with a dirty knife, so...
Right. Yeah, I swear I'm going to clean the bathroom. I saw a mouse in there this morning, and it freaked me out.
I thought we got rid of those.
Apparently not. Reason number 508 why we should get a cat.
I'd prefer not to lose our deposit.
A secret cat, Bella. What uni house is complete without an illegal pet?
Anyway, so I started cleaning the kitchen.
Right, yes, sorry.
And I found one of the, your monologues. It was under the dining table.
How the hell did it get there?
That is a great question, but it's sort of,
Oh no!
I guess someone must have spilt water on it, or vodka or something. I'm sorry.
Which one is it?
Kathleen Joyner, I think. That's the one about baking, if I remember correctly, but it's basically unreadable. All the ink's leaked. Look, I can just make out just a couple words is all.
I was so looking forward to finishing that one as well. It's the only one I've not done from start to finish.
Maybe it's a good thing it's ruined then? I just mean because the curiosity might get to you otherwise, and you said you wouldn't, you shouldn't read them ever again, just in case that letter was, like, in any way serious. Which it probably wasn't, you know, but curiosity killed the cat and all that.
But satisfaction brought it back, Bella. Cats have 9 lives, remember? And, like, even if the threat is real, surely they wouldn't mind me reading one I already started? That's, like, sunk cost or whatever.
Still, better safe than sorry, right? Right?
Yeah. Right.
I've got to go back to the kitchen before Sam has an aneurysm, but I thought you should have it back. Maybe don't leave them lying around in the kitchen.
I swear, I have no idea how it ended up there.
Like you have no idea how your socks end up in 5 different corners of the living room.
I just take them off somewhere different every time. My memory is terrible and you're not allowed to yell at me.
Sure, Nixie. Clean the bathroom today, please.
Okay, okay, fine. But if I find a mouse, you're getting rid of it for me. Same with any spiders.
Of course. Love you.
Love you. Phew. That was a close one, huh? But see, no melting, no exploding into flames, no knife-wielding author at the door ready to murder me. Safe as houses.
Thank you so much for listening to the Attic Monologues. If you're enjoying our show, please consider supporting us through our Patreon or Ko-fi to help us compensate the hard work our team puts into every episode. You can find links in the show notes below. Alternately, you can leave us a review or tell a friend, an enemy, or your oblivious love interest to listen. This episode was written and produced by Morgan Greensmith. It was directed and script edited by L.M. Kluhesi. The sound design was by Anna LeClaire, and the theme tune was composed by Wilkie Morrison. In this episode, you heard the voices of
Atlas Morgan as Nix Ryland.
Anne Lorion as Bella Crow.
The logo was designed by Ailey Lang. The social media is run by Soren Briarwood. You can find us on Twitter at Attic Monologues and on Instagram, Tumblr, Facebook and TikTok at The Attic Monologues. For more information on our show, our crew, our policies or other shows made by our people, check out our website www.planarprod.com.
Episode 18, Merely Players, will be out on October 26th. See you then!
Today's episode features a trailer for Hit Replay, a new audio drama miniseries from the mind of our director, L.M. Kluhesi. Hit Replay follows Hayden as they try to figure out where their missing flatmate Riley has gone. Told through voice notes and voicemails, this found audio podcast is part horror, part existentialism, part sci-fi fantasy, and perfect for fans of the Attic Monologues. Episode 1-3 drop this Friday, so without further ado, Hit Replay.
You have 1 new message. You have 2 new messages. You have 5 new messages. You have 8 new messages. You have 13 new messages. Hit Replay, a new limited series audio drama, coming soon.
This episode featured Kit Lovick as the voicemail. To learn more, visit us on Twitter @hit_replay_ad.